Hare Krishna. So, my thanks to all of you for coming here today evening. So, as I mentioned, the beginning of this introduction, I will speak on the topic of Ramayana. And I think three different incidents from the Ramayana which we'll discuss over the next few days. And the underlying theme will be moving from misunderstanding to understanding. Now, the Ramayana is a book which is centered on how human relationships can mirror divine relationships. That Lord Rama, he is the Supreme Person. At the same time, he does not stand above everyone else in majestic isolation. He is a God, he is a manifestation of God who is very much present in this world, in the midst of multifarious set of human relationships. He, of course, is God, and the relationship with him is divine. At the same time, he, through the various characters that are there in the Mahabharata, in the Ramayana, actually demonstrates the whole gamut of human relationships. How sometimes some relationships can go wrong, and how some relationships that have gone wrong can be set right, and how some relationships can stay right all the time. And one of the greatest pitfalls in relationships is misunderstanding. So the theme of our talks will be from misunderstanding to understanding. And today I will talk about a relationship which began much before Lord Ram comes into the picture. But then Lord Ram helps to restore the relationship. This is the relationship of the two brothers, Vali and Sugriva. Now both of them were Vanaras. Sometimes the word Vanara is translated as monkeys. However, they were not just like ordinary monkeys. The Vanaras were celestial apes. And that means that some of them were as powerful as humans, some of them were more powerful than humans also. Vali and Sugriva were actually the sons of the two Devatas, Indra and Surya. So Vali was the son of Indra. Vali was the son of Indra, and Sugriva was the son of Surya. Just as in the cosmic hierarchy, among the hierarchy of the Devatas, Indra is higher than Surya. Similarly, his son Vali was much stronger than Sugriva. This is Indra, simply because of his power and position, is given to bouts of pride and arrogance. Similarly, Vali too tended to become proud and arrogant about his own strength and power. Just as Indra and Surya work together to maintain the administration of the universe, similarly, their sons, Vali and Sugriva, work together to maintain the kingdom of the Vanaras. So they had many of the characters in the epics, the Ramayana and Mahabharata. Often they have a dual set of parents. So they have celestial parents, and their parentage manifests through some agent in this world also. So Rikshiraj was the king. And when Rikshiraj retired, at that time, Vali, as the eldest son, became the king. And Sugriva became his faithful assistant. And the two brothers were inseparable. They were so powerful together that nobody could challenge them. And the Vanaras lived in safety and prosperity under the protection of these two brothers. Now, Vali and Sugriva together were like the awesome twosome, extremely powerful. very difficult for anyone to counter. And normally, there are many people in this world who are proud of whatever they possess. So, generally speaking, whatever we possess, if we want to get some pleasure through that possession, we have to parade that possession. If I have wealth, then I have to have a very expensive car, very expensive house, very expensive clothes. By that I parade my wealth. And then when I see the admiration in people's eyes, actually more often than not, it is not admiration, it is envy that is there in the eyes. When I see that, then I feel, yes, I have arrived. I am successful. So the idea is, whenever there is strength, people want to parade whatever is it that we have, that we are proud of, we want to parade it. And we think that's how I will get pleasure. So, there were many demons who also lived at that time in the earth. And these demons, they are very proud of their strength. So we humans are actually intermediate in the cosmic hierarchy. So devatas are above us in consciousness and in power. The asuras, they are below us in consciousness, but they are above us in power. So the rakshasas, many of them, they felt that, who are these vanaras? We will show them. So once a demon of the name Mayavi, he came to the kingdom of the vanaras and he challenged, oh Vali, to come for a fight. So actually, even there we see that when they came to attack, Mayavi was a demon. But even such a demon, he did not come in to the kingdom and start attacking innocent people. What he did was, he stood outside the Kishkindha kingdom and he challenged. Oh Vali, you think you are so powerful? Come out and fight with me. I will crush your pride. So even the demons had some principles. Now, they would not attack innocent people. Sometimes, I was just a few days ago at Jacksonville University in Florida. And then after a class, a student asked this question. You know, religion is the cause of so much violence in today's world. And you see that sometimes people say that Islam is the cause of violence. But we see even in the Indian epics, there is so much violence. So why is it that religion is always associated with violence? So I answered that actually, yes, we should not have a paranoia for violence. In the sense that, even when you want to keep peace, often the United Nations deploys a peacekeeping force. So for peace, we need force. So that means there's some violence that is good. It's for causing peace, for bringing about peace. There's some violence which is bad, which is simply brutal. So if we compare, say, the violence that is described in the Mahabharata or the Ramayana, so the principles based on which whatever wars were fought were that the warriors would fight with warriors. So the battles would be between equals. And not only between equals when they are equipped. Now one warrior would not attack another warrior who was not at all equipped. And not only equipped, you may have a gun, I may have a bow and arrow, but if you're shooting someone else and somebody shoots from the other side. No, they're equipped and alert. So the wars were a matter of, was a test of skill and expertise. Who is a better archer? Who is a better swordsman? So it means among equals who were equipped and alert. But today, if we see the violence that is perpetrated in the name of religion, especially done by terrorists, it's exactly the antithesis of this. The terrorists, they attack civilians. They are no means equal. They are not trained to fight. They are not equipped to fight. And they're just civilians just going along in their normal way of living. And suddenly, some suicide bomber comes and attacks, or some people come and shoot. So this is completely an antithesis of any kind of principled warfare. The closest we get anywhere to this kind of violence in the epics is Ashwatthama's killing of the Pandava warriors and the Pandava sons at night on the 18th night of the Kurukshetra war. And that is universally condemned. Even Duryodhana condemns it. So the kind of violence that Ashwatthama does, all the other warriors are sleeping and he goes and kills them. So even the villain of the Mahabharata condemns it. But that is the kind of violence that is perpetrated in the name of religion by the terrorists. So we can't conflate all violence together and say that religion causes violence. Actually, there is just as the police have to have guns. But the police using guns and terrorists using guns is very different. So here we see even when a demon, Mayavi is a demon, but when he comes to fight, he doesn't start working havoc in Kishkindha. He stands at the outskirts of Kishkindha and bellows out the challenge. Oh Vali, come and fight with me. Now Vali springs from his throne and charges out. And Sugriva is ever alert. He knows that these demons can be tricksters. So it could be Vali is more than capable of overcoming any demon. But this might be an ambush attack. There might be a whole horde of demons who might attack Vali. And so Sugriva also goes with him. So Vali intends in having a fair one-to-one fight. But in case the demons are planning something devious, Sugriva is there to guard. But now when Mayavi sees both of these giant looking monkeys, Vanaras, charging towards him, he gets shaken. He shrinks back in fear. And then he assesses their strength. He's also a warrior. He knows how strong he is. He realizes, I have no match against them. And he flees. Now as he flees, Vali starts thinking. He says, this demon, he has the audacity to come and challenge me right on the outskirts of my kingdom. If he's not punished, then he's likely to come again. So, he gives chase. And his demons trying to shake him off. And he runs into this thicket, goes into that forest, tries to hide in the wilderness. But the Vanaras are also adept. They are also creatures of the jungle. So, they keep chasing him. And finally, in despair, he just jumps into a cave and disappears into it. Initially, Vali and Sugriva think that, oh, we have got him now. In this cave, he cannot escape. But as Vali enters the cave, he observes and he realizes, actually this cave is the entrance to a big network of underground passageways, catacombs as they call it, complex mazes there underneath. So, he tells Sugriva, you wait here. Now, we don't want him to escape without punishment. I will go inside and catch him. So Sugriva says, no, this is dark, these demons are dangerous, they're devious. Let me come with you. Both of us will go together. Vali says, no. You know, we have to make sure that he doesn't escape. You stay here. Sugriva pleaded with him. We don't know what danger will be there inside. Let us both go together. Vali says, no, you stay here. Reluctantly, Sugriva agrees, the younger brother. So while Vali goes inside, he just goes deep inside. Sugriva is standing guard. And time ticks on and on and on. Sugriva is waiting and waiting and waiting, and nothing seems to be happening. He tries to peer in. It's pitch dark inside the cave. He tries inside. He thinks of going inside, but then he realizes that the demon might escape. He doesn't want to disobey his brother. He stays on. And finally, after a long time, suddenly, he hears the roar of the demon. And he tries to wait and hear. He doesn't hear any sound of his brother. And as he keeps waiting, There's complete silence. He's waiting, waiting, waiting. And when there's deathly silence, that's all that he hears. His heart starts sinking. He has heard the demon roaring, but he has not heard his brother. He starts thinking that somehow this demon in the darkness of the cave must have ambushed Vali and killed him. Starts thinking, his blood is boiling with anger. He wants to avenge the death of Vali. But then he starts thinking, if this demon is powerful enough to have killed Vali, who was much more powerful than me, then will I really be able to kill him? And if I am not able to kill him, if he comes out, if he defeats me, if he kills me, then our kingdom will stay unprotected. And he will go, and with both my brother and me dead, he will break everything in our kingdom. Plunder our kingdom. So, he decides that discretion is the better part of valor. So he decides not to fight with the demon. And so that this cave became the tomb of Vali. Let that cave also become the tomb of Vali's killer. Thinking thus, he looks around and he finds a huge boulder. He goes to that boulder and starts pushing it with all his strength. Pushes and pushes and pushes. And finally gets that boulder on the mouth of that cave. And covers it. And with a heavy heart, he goes back to the kingdom. On going back, he announces to the citizens about what had happened. And there's a statewide mourning on the death of the king. And then, after all the rituals are completed, the courtiers tell Sugriva that the kingdom needs a king. And Vali's son Angada is still very small. He says, he cannot become the king. And Vali, you were the second in charge, so now you should become the king. Sugriva has no heart. His heart is filled with grief. But still, the call of duty summons him and he agrees. Now, as he ascends the throne, he's still thinking of Vali and the sad fate Vali had met in the forest. In the meanwhile, Vali had to search deep into the cave. And finally, when he had found the demon, he had pounced on the demon. And when he pounced on the demon, because Vali had been searching for the demon for a long time, and he attacked the demon. At that time, demon screams. But then they have a fierce fight and Vali overpowers them. Because they are deep inside the cave, Vali doesn't want to waste his energy. He's got the demon in his hands, so he doesn't roar or shout. He fights and he finishes the demon. And then he comes out. And as he's coming out triumphantly, and as you come to the end of a cave, we see light. He's retracing his steps back and he comes to the end of the cave, he doesn't see any light. He says, what's going on here? And he comes and he sees there's a huge boulder over there. How did this boulder come over here? Sometimes there are earthquakes and the earthquakes just cause some rocks to move here and there. But he finds that this boulder is exactly covering the door. Sugriva is supposed to be here. Instead of Sugriva, there is a boulder. So what is going on? He starts to become suspicious. He says, could Sugriva have put this boulder over here? He says, no. Sugriva is my brother. He's like my second half. I don't trust. There's no one I trust more than him. He will not betray me like this. No. But if he has not done this, how could this boulder have just exactly covered the door like this? Now, he is underneath and pushes at the boulder. Just cannot even make it budge. He's been tired. He's tired after the long chase, the fight, and the return. He collapses. And he falls asleep over there. He wakes up. As soon as he wakes up in the pitch darkness, he's hungry, he's thirsty, and all this adds to his anger. And again he starts pushing. He's not able to push at all. As his efforts meet greater and greater failure, not only does the anger increase, but his suspicion also increases. Just such a big boulder, so firmly placed, it cannot be by chance. How could Sugriva do this to me? Thinking like this, he becomes more and more angry. Finally, with a superhuman effort, the super simian effort, he's not a human, so he just pushes and he manages to get the boulder off. And seething with rage, charges back into the cave. When he comes there, he sees Sugriva sitting on the throne. His suspicion is confused. This wretched Sugriva, he conspired to kill me and now he's enjoying royal comfort. Sugriva, on seeing Vali alive, is delighted. Sugriva gets up to offer his respects to Vali. And then Vali just charges towards him to start pounding him. Sugriva is stunned as he sees the fury and the hatred in the eyes of Vali. He understands. He's also a king. A king means he's also from the royal family. He understands that Vali must have suspected. Vali must be thinking that I've trapped him over there. He tries to explain to Vali, but Vali is so angry. Just doesn't hear anything. He just keeps pounding him, pounding him. Sugriva tries to defend himself and he tries to fight back. But at this stage, he has no heart left to fight. Now, there's a thought that his own brother, for whom he had dedicated his life, has not only suspected him, but has convicted him. Is not even ready to give a chance for him to speak. Is not even giving him a fair hearing. That causes heart to sink. Rather than fight, he just decides to flee. He thinks that later, maybe when Sugriva has cooled down, when Vali has cooled down, then I'll clarify, explain. Thinking like this, he flees from there. And when he flees, Vali's suspicion gets further confirmed. If he had not done wrong, why would he flee like this? Sugriva is a wretch. I trusted him so much. He betrayed me so bitterly. He starts charging after Sugriva. To keep beating, Sugriva flees and flees. And now, Vali returns back to the kingdom, but then he uses his royal power to pursue and persecute Sugriva. And Sugriva has to flee far and wide somehow to find a shelter somewhere. Finally, he finds a shelter at the banks of the Pampa Sarovar. A sage who had been angered by Vali's arrogance. He told Vali, if you come here, you will be killed. And therefore, Vali can't come there. And there, Sugriva stays in fear, knowing that though Vali can't come, Vali may send his agents to kill him. And that's why when Ram comes there, when Ram, after Sita has been abducted, when Ram comes there with Lakshmi, Vali is on top of a mountain, he sees what is going on. Who are these two strange looking mystics? Normally, Ram has the garb of a mystic. Not a mystic or a mendicant or a sage. But then he's carrying bow and arrow. He says, who are these strange human people? They're so powerful. And either they're Brahmana or they're Kshatriyas. They're dressed like Brahmanas, but they're carrying their weapons like Kshatriyas. Who are these? Could they be agents of Sugriva? So could they be agents of Vali? He starts becoming fearful like this. So here we see that Sugriva becomes so fearful constantly of how Vali will attack. And Vali, the same brother whom he had loved so much, is constantly thinking, how can I finish this person? So if you look at the whole story, you know, what went wrong? How could two brothers who loved each other so much that they were ready to lay down their lives for each other, how could they become such mortal enemies But one of them was ready to kill the other, and the other had to flee for his life, constantly be in fear of his life. Actually, this incident illustrates a fundamental human tendency. That often ruins relationships. And that tendency is the tendency for judging without understanding. We see certain situation, and when we see the situation without understanding the situation, we judge it. Okay. We see somebody doing something. Why is this person doing like this? So we all, when we interact with people, all that we can see is their behavior, their actions. Now we can't see their intentions. But now we all, based on their actions, we ascribe intentions to them. This is called as attribution. Attribution means we see a behavior, we see action, and we attribute a particular intention to people based on their action. And often we attribute intentions based on our own preconceptions. So for example, if I don't like someone, for whatever reason, I don't like some person, and then if I see that person eating a lot, I say, this person is a glutton. How much is he eating? What is this? No sense control. How will they eat? On the other hand, if we like someone, they eat a lot. Must be very hungry. Of course, if I eat a lot, I was so hungry. So, our attribution, what intention we attribute to a person when we see their action, that is based on our preconception. And in general, we are very generous, very charitable when the attribution comes to those whom we like or to ourselves. Now, if we see somebody who we don't like sleeping for a long time, such a lazy person. If I sleep for a long time, I was tired. So in this way, we see actions, we can't know intentions. But we assume the intentions, we say attributes of intentions. And this is where we go wrong. Now Vali and Sugriva both made inferences. And the inferences of both of them were wrong. So both of them saw certain thing. Sugriva saw that Vali has gone deep inside the cave, and I can't hear any sound of it. So based on the evidence that he had, I can't hear any sound of Vali, and he's gone deep in, I can hear only the sound of the demons. I heard only the sound of it. From this evidence, he inferred that Vali is dead. It's a reasonable inference. Similarly, Vali inferred, he saw first this rock, this boulder, which could not have been moved by a natural force and positioned in such a precise way, that is covering the cave. Somebody must have done it. So the boulder was one evidence that maybe Sugriva has done this. And then, when you saw Sugriva sitting on the kingdom, that is another evidence. He put 2 and 2 together and he came to 22. He didn't count to 4. He said, then boulder was put by Sugriva. Sugriva sitting on the throne. So he put the 2 together and he said that Sugriva must have intentionally put that boulder there to shut me down and grab the throne. So again, from his perspective, based on the evidence, the inference was reasonable. So both of them, based on whatever knowledge they had, they made certain inferences. And their inferences were reasonable. And interestingly, both their inferences were wrong. So Sugriva's inference was wrong because Vali was still alive. And Vali's inference was wrong because Sugriva had no bad intention. But the problem, the difference is that Sugriva was in a situation where he could not, he felt that he could not risk any error. That means he felt that his demon is so powerful that he could kill Vali, then I have to protect my kingdom. I have to do what it takes. So he closed the door of the cave, the entry of the cave, things like this. Now as far as Vali was concerned, you know, he was much more powerful than Sugriva. And Sugriva had already served him for so long, so well. So Sugriva was at least entitled to a fair hearing. So what happened with Vali is, he judged without understanding. Normally we know a basic principle in any court case is that if the plaintiff is there, the plaintiff gives the complaint. Sometimes there are these, there are maybe some TV serials where you know the court cases are being shown. Now if we hear just the plaintiff, the complainant side of the story, and by the end of the complainant's lawyer makes the case, it's completely proven, this person is guilty. But then you hear the defendant side of the story, and say, hey, I never thought of this. I never thought of this. So usually what happens for us, when we observe something, so in a court case, whoever speaks first, they can present their case in so persuasive a way that they think they are right, till we hear the other side of the story. So we understand, as a principle of natural justice, that before a judge makes any decision, the judge should hear both sides of the story. This same principle we need to apply in the court of our own heart. In the court of our own heart means, whenever we see a situation based on our own conceptions about the people involved, our mind immediately comes up with a story. They did like this, maybe they meant like this. Now this is our mind's version of the story. There could very well be a completely different version of the story. And we don't know it. So now, in one of the fondest pastimes of people is gossiping. You know, gossiping means what? That word gossip in Sanskrit, in the Bhakti literature, is prajalpa. It's useless talk. But gossiping essentially means what? We talk about a problem with someone who is neither a part of the problem nor a part of the solution. You know what she did. Actually, what are we doing by that? You know, certainly there are things which are going wrong and they need to be solved. But then if somebody is a part of the problem or somebody is part of the solution, then talk with them. Otherwise, what purpose do we serve by spreading negativity? Often, it is that if we feel that somebody has done something wrong, it is best to seek a clarification. If we have a relationship, seek a clarification with that person. If not, seek a clarification with someone whom that person knows, who knows that person. Otherwise, we end up talking about people instead of talking with people. Talking about someone instead of talking with that person. And that just spreads misunderstanding. It spreads misunderstanding further and further. So you know what they did, what that person did. And it becomes like a small thing can become huge. And actually there is very little basis to it. So our mind is telling one side of the story, and then we tell that story to someone else. Can you keep a secret? We tell someone, yes, of course I can keep a secret. And then we tell them, and then they go us and tell us, can you keep a secret? And that way, what happens is, everybody tells everyone else to keep the secret. But they themselves don't keep the secret. So, what is secret becomes public knowledge. And in that way, the misunderstandings can spread not just from one person to another person to hundreds of people. And nowadays, with internet available, you know, one person has some idea about someone, just put it in one mass mail, send it on one WhatsApp group, put it on some website, and you can just spread conceptions all over the world. So technology is very powerful, but its power is value neutral. If intelligent people use it, if wise people use it, good people use it, it can bring good. But otherwise, it can cause a lot of harm. So the tendency to judge without understanding, that is a tendency just present in everyone of us. You know, in cricket, there is the concept of giving the benefit of doubt. Suppose a batsman is running, and the batsman has to get into the crease before the fielder hits the wicket. And the batsman is just almost inside. Then the third umpire will check from the left, from the right, from his direction. The bat is inside the line, it has the bat touched the ground or not? And if they can't make out from various directions, then they give the benefit of doubt. Okay, the batsman is inside. So there is doubt. There are times when we can doubt, and there are times when we need to give the benefit of doubt. So as far as Sugriva was concerned, as far as Vali was concerned, his relationship with Sugriva. But Sugriva deserved the benefit of doubt. Why? Sugriva was his own brother. Sugriva had served him faithfully. He knew Sugriva right from his childhood. Now, it is possible that sometimes people can change and people can do terrible things. But if somebody whom we love and trust, we are accusing them of something terrible, then we need to have concrete evidence. Otherwise, if it's just a chain of inferences, you know, this means this, this means this, this means this. The chain of inferences that we have, that can just be our imagination going wild. So, in the case of Vali, he saw Sugriva, the evidence was reasonable. As I said, the evidence was there, and from that his inference was reasonable. But actually, for us, in whatever situation we are, based on whatever we observe, our mind spins a story. And for us, our story is the most persuasive. Why? Because I am right. I'm so clever, how can I be wrong? And quite often, to make things worse, once we make a particular judgment about someone, then it doesn't just remain a judgment about that person, it becomes an ego issue about us. How could I be wrong? If somebody comes and starts presenting evidence, you know, you did like this, you spoke like this, but you know, this person is like this. You are biased, you are partial to that person. So instead of considering the possibility that I may be wrong, we start blaming whoever starts presenting the case of that person. So Vali, after he banished Sugriva, there were times when he felt some twinges of conscience. Did I do something wrong with my brother? Just send him off into the forest. Now he had his spies, and the spies he knew that Vali was living in a forest, living in the Pampasa lake area, is living in the forest without any royal comforts. And he was also a prince, a king practically. And he, for him, this was just like Ram was one day about to become the king, the son of the king, and the next day was in the forest. Similarly, for Sugriva, one day he was next to the king, And next day, it was an exam. So it was a great austerity for him. And so while he felt some twinges of conscience, but he crushed them. He crushed them. Why? Because he felt, I have made the judgment, my judgment must be right. So we need to, whenever we judge people, actually it is best that we don't judge people. Because when it comes to judging, unless we are putting in the time and thought and energy to understand both sides of the story, based on one side of the story we judge, we are often prone to error. And understanding both sides of the story often takes time. If we are in a position where that matters, that issue matters very strongly to us, if we are in a position where making a decision is vitally important for us, then before judging a person, especially before publicly speaking negatively about someone, now we need to very carefully go through things. For Vali, he was the king and Sugriva was on the throne. So for Vali to drive Sugriva out of the kingdom, in the eye of public eye of everyone, that was a very strong public statement of condemnation. Not just condemnation, but conviction. So, many, and I like to call this as the recipe for ruining relationships. We all took out recipe for doing things positively. No recipe for cooking this, recipe for cooking that. None of, we all want to maintain our relationships. But we often succumb to judging without understanding. And if we do that, even the best of relationships that we may have, they can be ruined. So now, what could Vali have done differently? Simple thing. He could have just allowed Sugriva a fair hearing. So when we see somebody doing something which we feel is objectionable, where we feel that what they are doing is objectionable, then what do we do? If we feel it's a matter important enough for us to need to know what is right, then just go straight to that person. And not in a judgmental way, but in a gentle way, maybe privately. We ask them, you know, I saw this and I couldn't understand what was happening. What made you do that? And then they'll explain. Sometimes people can also become very defensive and we need to be careful about it. But seeking a clarification at least shows that person that we are not immediately judging them. We are not immediately condemning them. Not only did Vali not seek a clarification, Vali did not hear the clarification even when Sugriva was trying to give that. And in this way, Sugriva had to live in the forest for a long time. When Ram came into the Kishkindha area, at that time, eventually, through the agency of Hanuman, that's a long story, I won't go into that. Hanuman, Vali told, Sugriva told Hanuman, you go and find out who these brothers are. And in order to maintain, conceal Sugriva's location and identity, Hanuman changed his form. He went to the reserve of Ramana. And he inquired from Ram and Lakshmi. When he found out that they were Ram, he was the prince of Ayodhya, was delighted. And then they came back. He brought Vali and he brought Ram and Lakshmi to Sugriva. And the Sugriva told his whole story. Now what happened at that time? Vali did not just drive Sugriva away. Now Sugriva had his own palace, Sugriva had his own family. So when Vali drove Sugriva away, he not only disentitled him of his position in the royal family, he took everything away from him. And somehow Vali got that idea that because Sugriva has betrayed me, because Sugriva has taken, Sugriva tried to take from me what was mine. Therefore, to punish him, I will take from him what is his. So he did not give him any of his royal comforts, not let him take anything with him. And even Sugriva's wife, he took for himself. Now when Ram heard this, Ram was furious. He said that an elder brother is meant to protect a younger brother. And for an elder brother to treat you like this, here we can see the difference between how Ram treats Bharat. Ram could also have, we'll talk about that tomorrow more. You know, Ram could have been suspicious of Bharat. Maybe Bharat was conniving with Kaikeyi. But it's very different. So an elder brother is often in the position like a father, surrogate father. So he says, for him to treat you so badly is atrocious. He says, he deserves to be punished. Now, Sugriva also described how again and again he had tried to send messengers, tried to seek reconciliation, tried to offer clarification. Never once was he willing to listen. So Radha and Ram decided, we will punish him. So he told Vali, we told Sugriva, you go and challenge Vali. Sugriva said that, how can I challenge him? He's much more powerful. He says, don't worry, I'll be there with him. So he went and challenged. And at that time, Vali came out and they had a fight. Sugriva fought to the best of his capacity. But Vali was too powerful. Vali was beating and beating and beating Sugriva. And finally Sugriva fled from there. When Sugriva fled, at that time, Sugriva came running back to the place where Ram was hiding. Ram was there and they came back to the hiding place. When Ram came there, he said, you know, if you were not going to help me, why did you send me for fighting? So Ram said, actually, I wanted to help you. But both of you look so similar. I couldn't recognize who is who. So now, let me ask the question, how can Ram, he's God, how can you not recognize him? So then what happened? Ram told Sugriva, you know, there should be some differentiation between the two. So he said, Lakshman here has his garland. He put on this garland. And now Sugriva, he came before Lakshman, he put his head down. And Lakshman put the garland on. The Acharyas explained that actually Sugriva, although he was the younger brother of the king, Vali will be the king, he was the younger brother. But he had some pride within him. And he thought that Ram is my equal. But Lakshma is inferior. So when Hanuman actually brought Ram and Lakshman to meet Sugriva for the first time, and Sugriva understood who they were, Sugriva, he had a, even in the forest, there is etiquette, there is hierarchy. So there is a stump of a tree on which Vali was sitting, or Sugriva was sitting. And then Vali pointed to another stump of a tree, more or less at the same height, and he offered that to Ram, but he did not offer anything to Lakshman. But Lakshman is the younger brother. I will talk with Ram. So when Hanuman saw this, Hanuman was very sensitive. And Hanuman immediately brought the stump of a tree and gave it to Lakshman. So throughout their dealings, Sugriva was quite negligent of Lakshman. Now Lakshman, Balaram, they all represent the Guru Tattva. That is a spiritual master and the representative spiritual master. So Ram wanted to demonstrate that one cannot get the mercy of God without getting the mercy of the Guru. So when Sugriva was garlanded by Lakshman, at that time he bowed down so that he could put his garland. That way he offered his respects to Lakshman. And then after that, Sugriva went to fight again. Sugriva was a little fearful. He said, Ram, are you really going to help me? He said, yes, don't worry, I'm going to help you. And Sugriva went and again challenged. Now Vali was in his inner chambers. Surprised. He said, I gave this monkey just a big beating. How has he come back again now? Does he want to be beaten again? He immediately got up. And now Vali's wife, Tara, was very intelligent. And she said, wait a minute. He said, yes, Sugriva is also an intelligent monkey. He knows that he's not as strong as you. If he has again come to fight with you, I'm sure it must be only because he's backed by someone who's more powerful. Otherwise, he would not come. And now Vali had become so arrogant, so overconfident of his strength, that Vali would not, he thought, who can threaten me? I am so powerful. So every king has to have some espionage, some spies. And the spies report the movements of one's enemies. But Vali was so proud that he would not pay any attention to the spies also. But Tara was still very diligent. And she would also help in the royal affairs. So when the spies would come and give news, if Vali would not pay any attention to them, then Tara would hear the news. And then Tara would convey to Vali whatever she felt was important. So Tara told that, I've heard from the spies that Sugriva has formed an alliance with Ram. And Ram is an extremely powerful king, prince. Now he has killed big, formidable demons like Tataka, Subahu. So he says, if that Ram is there, then told Vali that will be great danger for you. He said, don't worry, he says, there is no danger for me. I could fight against anyone. So he just neglected Tara's words. And he just charged out to fight. As he came out to fight, again Vali and Sugriva had a fierce fight. And soon Vali had the upper beating and beating Sugriva. And Ram was behind her. Three, he came out and took an arrow, he shot. And he shot that arrow, just went in the chest of Vali, just fell on the ground. Vali was shocked. He says, who has shot me like this? This is grievously against the principles of warfare. He looked around, he's around standing over there. So then he turned towards Ram and he says, how is it? I thought you were a virtuous king and you have fought so viciously. You have attacked me without even warning me when I was fighting with someone else. This wicked Sugriva, first he tried to kill me, now he has spoiled you also. He has contaminated you also. Because of this you are fighting this. So Ram came out and Ram was very compassionate. He said that, oh Ali, before judging whether I have killed you fairly or unfairly, since hear what I have to say. And if you think that I have wounded you unfairly, I will take out this arrow and I'll give you back your life. This is Ram's voice. He can do whatever he wants. He's God. Then Ram gives the whole chapter in the Ramayana where Vali accuses and Ram counters. Ram gives multiple reasons. First reason he says is that actually there are Atatainas. Atatainas are aggressors. People who commit crimes, especially people who commit brutal crimes, and there are various categories, somebody who murders, somebody who burns, somebody who abducts someone's family, somebody who steals property, like that, those who are somebody who gives poison, those who are aggressors like this, but they have already committed such a crime that there is nothing wrong in punishing them. You see, sometimes if a criminal is very brutal, the police may give a shoot at sight order. So normal criminals, they have been given a fair hearing. After that, there is a sentencing in the court and then the person can be punished. But if a criminal is particularly despicable, then there is a shoot at sight order. This person is so dangerous that we cannot afford to even consider the possibility of such a person slipping away. So just as soon as you see, shoot at sight. This is exception. It's not the norm. Normally, police are expected to give a fair hearing, but there are times when this kind of order has to be given. So similarly, in the Vedic culture, it is stated that actually, if a person attacks with murderous intent, is atataina, is aggressor of this kind, then the important thing is to bring that person to justice. So if it can be done by normal means, then it's fine. If not, then whatever means is required, use that means. So, now he says, that because you had attacked Sugriva, because you had tried to kill him, because you had dispossessed him of his kingdom, because you had stolen his wife, for an elder brother to cohabit with his younger brother's wife, that is almost like incest. Because of all this, he says, you deserve to be punished. The Ramayana commentators explain that actually one of the reasons why Vali was so undefeatable, Vali had overpowered Ravana also at one time. One of the reasons why Vali was so undefeatable was that he had got a benediction. That whoever he would have to fight with, half of that person's power would come to him. So whatever power that person has, Vali has his own power, that person has this much power. Whatever power that person has, half of that person's power comes to him. So that person's power will always become lesser than Vali's power. So because of that benediction, the odds were always stacked in favor of Vali. So Vali just could not be defeated by anyone in a straight fight. Now of course, whatever benediction whoever gets from anyone, Ram as God can change that. But he defers to the cosmic order. So if the devatas have given some blessings, then he honors that. So Rama decided that's how he would kill. He says, you are an aggressor, and whatever means, your crime that you have committed is so despicable. You have attacked your brother so viciously that, and today the Rama says, you deserve to be shot at sight. That's what I did with you. It's a long to and fro argument. And finally, Vali is called silent. He acknowledges that what he did was wrong. Actually, for Vali also, his Ram's arrow, initially, it crushes his pride. Because for a great warrior, he has fallen on the ground. But Ram's arrow-like words, they purify him. The arrow which has humbled him now, and then Ram's words enlightened him, and which have illumined him. This combination actually helps him realize the error of his ways. He, as I said, he also had these pangs of conscience. Am I treating Sugriva fairly? Am I doing something wrong? But he just squelched them. He had not paid any attention to them. However, now when Ram speaks this, when he's confronted with the gravity of what he had done. At that time, there's no denial for him. He just has to accept. I have blundered terribly. And when Ram again repeats his offer, he says that if you still think that I have done anything wrong, I'll give you a life back. So actually, Ram's words, Ram's contacts. Now here, we have to see that Vali is not a demon. Sometimes there is a clear fight between the Rakshasas, the Ravana, Kumbhakarna, they are demons. Indrajit is a demon. Vali is not a demon. Vali is also a pious person. In fact, he is a virtuous person. He is a king of a devata, son of a devata. But sometimes such bitter misunderstandings can happen between two pious people. Two people who are good, they can have a really bad fight. So, but Vali's conscience has come back now. And his godliness manifests. And he tells Ram, oh Lord, lives one can get many. But a death like this in your presence, it is very rare. So I prefer a death in your presence. And he sees his heart come. Completely changes at that time. His heart changes and he realizes that he has blundered terribly. So Ram's arrow could have killed him immediately, but Indra had given Vali a necklace, and that special necklace, as long as he wore it, life would not leave his body. So although he had been terribly wounded, and although he was in pain, still his life would not leave his body because that necklace was there. And what he did, naturally every father would like the best of his possessions to go to his son. That's what parents, they accumulate things so that they can pass them on to their children. So now, after Vali falls, the news spreads throughout Kishkindha. And then, Angada, Tara, all the courtiers come running out. And Angada is right next to Vali. But Vali, he has this necklace. He starts taking this necklace out. And he realizes that he has created a terrible split in the family. But he wants that split to end with him. So he turns towards Sugriva and he says that Tara was very virtuous. She was very intelligent and she told me to patch up with you. But I was so foolish that I didn't listen to her. He says, Angad, he is a very valiant young boy. So you know, Sugriva, whatever wrongs I have done to you, please don't take the anger out on them. They are innocent. And he turns to Angad and he says that please don't blame Sugriva for what has happened. This arrow that has hit me is because of my own mistakes. And then he tells Tara to stay under the shelter of Sugriva, because he was he would be the patriarch of the family thereafter. And then these are the last breaths, he takes out his necklace. And he could well have been justified in giving that necklace to Angada. Father would give his best position to his son. But he gives that necklace to Sugriva. And this is the way he shows his remorse. He's not just, he seeks forgiveness from Sugriva. I misunderstood you. I treated you very badly. But sometimes when we have made serious mistakes, an apology is important, but apology alone is not enough. We have to show through our actions also that we mean that we made a mistake. So through this action, Vali conveys that he's how repentant he is. And that means that with that necklace, Sugriva will be practically invincible. And he gives that necklace to Sugriva. And as the necklace slips out of the hand of Vali into the hand of Sugriva, life slips out of Vali's body. And Vali falls dead on the ground. And all the Vanaras, they start crying in sorrow. Sugriva starts thinking, this was the brother with whom I played since my childhood. This was the brother with whom I learned the skills of a warrior. This was the brother with whom we went on so many hunting exhibitions. This was the brother with whom I fought against so many demons. This was the brother with whom I ruled this kingdom. And this same brother is lying dead because of me. Because of my greed for a kingdom. For a kingdom, I have caused the death of my brother. Thinking thus, he starts crying bitterly. And he says, the same funeral pyre that will kill my brother, he says, I will light another funeral pyre and I will die. He says, I have committed the crime of fratricide. I have killed my own brother and I do not deserve to live. So both Lakshman and Ram, they console. So then they tell him that the soul is eternal. The soul comes into the body, stays for a particular duration and then goes into another body. Vali's soul has already come to auspicious destination. But the best way you can show your love for Vali, you can show your respect for Vali, is by carrying on the responsibility that he has entrusted to you. And it's for you, O king, now to show resilience, to show composure and lead your citizens who are in grief. It is not for you to give in to grief. We speak words of wisdom and only Sugriva picks himself up emotionally and physically. And then Sugriva arranges for a royal funeral for Vali. And thereafter, after another period of mourning for his brother, then he ascends the throne. And he enthrones Angada as the prince. And that way, thereafter, they serve Ram together. So here we see that there is a reconciliation. The Pandavas and the Kauravas, there was no reconciliation. Why? Because one party was totally demoniac till the end. But here, Vali was not demoniac. And Vali realized the error of his ways eventually. He repented, he reformed. So all this could have been avoided if this tragic confrontation with brothers ending in the death of one brother, all this could have been avoided if just a little patience had been shown by Vali and some clarification had been sought. Now, here Ram intervened. If Ram had not intervened, that animosity could have gone on throughout their life. Throughout their life. Although it continued out throughout their life, at least before death, there was reconciliation. And that's how Ram brought these two brothers together. So, when I talked earlier about how we can try to avoid judging without understanding. If you look back at our life, there are many times when we actually judge without understanding. We have already probably judged people without understanding. So what do we do at that time? That is also illustrated through the actions of Vali. So what did Vali do? If you consider the actions, I put them in a triple A acronym. AAA. First is acknowledge. Acknowledge. Acknowledge means recognize. Accept that I made a mistake. So acknowledgement is internal. Second is apologize. We express whatever I made a mistake to the person who has heard of that mistake. And third is amend. Now we do practically certain things. We can't undo the past, but we can rebuild from the present. What has been done can't be changed, but we can chart a better future. So by this way, whatever hurts have been there, they can be rectified. So by acknowledging, by apologizing and by amending, we can start healing the relationships that have been strained and wounded by our tendency to judge without understanding. Then we can ask some questions. So I started by talking about the story of Vali and Sugriva, how they were brothers, sons of God, sons of Devatas all together, but they both made mistaken inferences. Based on the evidence available to them, their inference is very reasonable. But the evidence available to them was incomplete. Now, Sugriva could not afford to give the benefit of doubt at that particular time. Because he felt the whole kingdom was at stake at that time. But Vali could have given the benefit of doubt. And all the more so because for Vali, his brother had always been a trustworthy aid. But unfortunately, when we see somebody's actions, we attribute intentions to them. And that attribution which we do, it's based on our preconception about that person. If you like them, we give a positive attribution. If you don't like them, we give a negative attribution. So, and once we attribute a particular intention to people, then whatever they do after that, that reinforces that conception. Because he's like that, because she's like, that's why they're doing this. And any evidence to the contrary that is presented, we just reject it. We silence it. In that way, now first our judgment is mistaken, and then once our ego comes into the picture, we stick to that judgment against contrary evidence also. That's what unfortunately Vali did. He did not hear Sugriva's case. He did not hear anyone who presented Sugriva's case. He did not even hear his own conscience. So whenever any judge has to give judgment, the judge needs to hear both sides of the story. So our mind, as soon as we see a particular thing, when we do attribution, our mind tells us one side of the story. But there is always the other side of the story. Instead of talking with others, we end up talking about others. And talking about others, talking about X to Y, Z, A, B, C, E, every A, B, C, D, everyone will talk, but except that particular person. And then that's what gossiping is all about. Gossip means you talk about particular situation, the person who is neither a part of the problem nor a part of the solution. And then eventually Ram had to intervene. And through Ram's physical, martial and verbal intervention, there's a reconciliation. So when Vali was humbled by Ram's arrows and Ram's arrow like words, he completely repented. And his repentance was expressed through his giving his life-sustaining necklace, not to his own son, but to his brother whom he had wronged. And he acknowledged, he apologized, and he amended. So by being patient, we can avoid judging with our understanding. But if at all we have judged, then we can try to rectify according to the time, place, circumstance. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments?
Thank you, Krishna. Thanks for the class and explanation about the whole incident. Just one question. Sometimes, since we are following a spiritual path, we are expected to do a lot more in terms of tolerance, patience. And so, if you are judged, like we are judged, then how do we, like, we are misjudged, say for example, then how do we handle the situation?
So, in spiritual life, we are often expected to do a lot more than others in terms of being patient, tolerant. But if we are judged or misjudged by others, what should we do at that time? There are three different things involved over here. First is that we can never satisfy everyone. The easiest way to make ourselves miserable is to try to make everyone happy with us. We just can't do it. So some people, no matter what we do, they are going to be dissatisfied. So we just have to understand what service I have to do in my life and continue doing that service. And people will speak something about us, but if we are consistently doing our service, then our actions will speak louder than words. Now, having said that, there are certain devotees who are important for us, some of our spiritual guides, those who are in positions of authority or positions of who are they guiding us. Now, with them, we can also give a clarification. Especially if we have one or two devotees who understand us well, then they can become as a bridge between us and others. And through them, we can convey our side of the story. And then it can be clarified to others also. That's the second thing. Now, we don't have to bother about what everyone is thinking about us. But if important people, we clarify, that is enough. But sometimes it happens that nobody seems to understand us. Now, I'm giving this whole answer based on the assumption that we are actually being misjudged. Sometimes it may be that we have also done something wrong. That's a different situation. But assuming that we are misjudged, if whatever we do, nothing seems to be clarifying, nothing seems to be resolving things, then that is the time we should know that this is the time for us to exhibit some tolerance. Tham sitichya swabhava. Because what happens, sometimes certain karmic reactions come to us in particular ways. So it is not just that particular action to which we are getting the reaction. This is a small thing, why are you making so big? Do you understand that? It is not just that small thing. Yes, that small thing has become big, but there is some karma involved in the past. If we look at our life and other situations, you know, we may have made some big mistake, but we got away without any penalization for that. So in the long run, actually life balances out. So when this happens, when we find that, you know, here there is misunderstanding, there there is misunderstanding, there there is misunderstanding, we just know that this is a bad patch we are going through in our life. So when we understand this is a bad patch, what can we do? Tolerate it. When everything in life, everything in the material world is temporary. The pleasures are temporary and the problems are also temporary. So even if there is a misunderstanding, everybody, in Kali Yuga, people's memories are short. So, today there is one controversy, there is one misunderstanding, and tomorrow they'll find some other misunderstanding, some other controversy. And once they go to second, third, fourth, by the time they come to fourth or fifth, the first one is already forgotten. So, we shouldn't take it too seriously. It's at that time, know that they're going through a bad patch, and don't overreact. Just continue doing what we are doing as well as we can. And over a period of time, the misunderstanding goes away. So, we should just focus on our service to Krishna. And as a service, we can try to clarify. But if the clarification doesn't work, we understand that clarification I did, we should be attached to the fruits of our work. So sometimes we also have to apply that to clarification. We shouldn't be attached to the fruits of clarification. Sometimes we may offer a clarification and things may not get clarified. So you understand that as long as the main service to Krishna is going on, then sometimes some clarifications may work, sometimes things may not work. If we're consistently serving, consistently doing our best, over a period of time, things will get clarified. Thank you. Great. Any other questions?
There are two things. One, your question is, Sabrina and Dali, they had different fathers, yet they were brothers. But the essence of the fathers, they were sons of David.
Okay.
And the other is, you had said that...
One question, let's complete all your answer. So, if Sugriva and Vali, they had different fathers, Indra and Surya, how were they considered brothers? Actually, sometimes the devatas, when the celestials give birth, it can happen in different ways. So, in this particular case, actually they arranged for both their children to come in this world through Rikshiraj. So, Rikshiraj was the king of the Vanaras, and they entrusted these two children whom they had in the heavens, they entrusted them to Rikshiraj. So Rikshiraj, or the king of the Vanaras, he was like their foster father, the person who took care of them. And for all practical purposes, they lived as the children of Rikshiraj. And because he was their common father, that's why they are considered brothers.
Yeah, the other question I had was, you mentioned that after Bali passed away, Sugriva was lamenting that, look what I have done as a result of my grief for a kingdom. I mean, was that just, an emotional expression of humility, because he had done so much soul-searching and introspection before he decided to make that cave Bali's tomb. And yeah, he decided that he was really going to serve the throne to the protection of the kingdom, not for personal gain. So how did he go from knowing that he had done that in good conscience to now saying that, look, I have done this for the real kingdom?
Okay. So when Sugriva felt that I have killed my brother for my own greed, so he had actually very conscientiously thought out before putting the hole on the cave. So why did he think like this? Actually, at this point when he was thinking, it was primarily about Vali's being shot by Ravana. That particular situation where Vali had been killed, he felt it was I who teamed with Ram, and then Ram shot Vali because of me. He was thinking, because of me, he was killed. Now, Ram consoled him. See, there are emotions which we all go through, and our emotions, they don't always reflect reality. But our emotions reflect also our orientation, our sensitivity, our attitude. Say, if a person is starving on the streets, one emotion away, they are just suffering the results of their crime. Now, we may say this is philosophically true, but from a point of view of sensitivity, if we are in a position to help them, we can and should help them. We can give them some prasad, something we should do. So, sometimes the philosophical reality and the emotional sensitivity, they both need to go together, and they may not go together. If one just focuses only on the philosophical reality, if everybody is simply suffering because of their karma, that's all we, if we start looking at the whole of life in terms of karma, I'll talk about this in one of the future classes, we can end up becoming very hard-hearted. If a baby is crying, should the mother think, the baby is crying because of her karma? No, the mother is going to take care of the baby, isn't it? So, just, we cannot, the philosophical reality, in one sense, is objective reality. Karma is objective reality. But we also have to consider from the view of emotional sensitivity. So here, it just reflects Sugriva's soft-heartedness. That he was not a power-hungry person who had deviously conspired to have his brother killed so that he could grab power. Even after he had been wrong, even after he had justifiable grievances, then when his brother fell, still he felt grief. That shows his soft-heartedness. Does that answer your question? So he was not at all to be blamed, but his feeling reflects his soft-heartedness. And that's why when Ram consoled him, he accepted it. He knew that, in the back of his mind, he knew that he was not to be blamed, but still he felt, because of me this happened. So these feelings simply reflect his sensitivity.
I think it was a peculiar for me to accept that explanation that somehow he could be soft-hearted, yet not deny the fact that he did act in good conscience. Somehow I wish that the two could coexist. His sensitivity,
okay,
without denying.
So could Sugriva, he could have been good conscience and he could still have been sensitive also. He could have said that I acted in good conscience. See, there is, when it comes to emotions, the emotions that we feel, they don't always follow the rules of logic. So if we see Yudhishthir Maharaj in the Bhagavatam, after the whole Kurukshetra war happens, he feels that, I caused this war. For my sake, this whole war was fought and so many people were killed. Now the reality is far opposite to that. Because Yudhishthir did everything possible to avoid the war. Sometimes we say, I have done everything humanly possible. Actually, Yudhishthir had done everything humanly possible and everything divinely possible. Krishna, God himself, has gone to Shantiputra. So, when we see people's emotions, especially under moments of stress, we should see them. We can't start analyzing. Why are you not thinking logically? At that time, you just appreciate the heart of that person. If they stick to that illogical emotion, then it becomes a problem. If Yudhishthir started acting on it, I will not rule, I will renounce the world, then everybody objected. No, you can't do that. So Sugriva did not do that. So especially under moments of stress, our emotions may go in various ways. And we are not, nobody is to be judged based on those emotions. So even Krishna tells Arjuna that the wise person does not lament at the time of death, does not lament on seeing the death of anyone. But when Abhimanyu is killed, Arjuna is grief struck. And Krishna does not tell Arjuna, you forgot Bhagavad Gita now. He doesn't say that. Krishna is sensitive, Krishna is gentle, Krishna is consoling, Krishna is encouraging. So when a person is going through a particular set of emotions, at that time, we have to encourage them to come back on the right track. But you don't have to just dismiss their emotions as illogical or irrational, but to sensitively get them on the right track.
So it was stated in the lecture that when we see someone's action, we attribute intention depending on whether we like them or not. So my question is, if Bali and Sabriva are brothers and there's so much love between them, how could Bali just immediately think that Sabriva's, intentions were ill-minded if he already had like a positive like attributions to his brother?
So if we attribute intention based on our perception of people, why did Vali attribute negative intention to Sugriva? Actually, it was not immediate. First was that in the cave, when he saw that the cave door was closed, from that time, the suspicion started coming for him. And then he tried to push and push, and the more that boulder would not move, the more this could not have been done naturally. Some person must have done it. And eventually when he came out and when he saw Sugriva on the throne, he said, when I am alive, how can he be sitting on the throne? That was like a confirmation for him. So at that time he was already exhausted, he was frustrated, and he was infuriated. That's not at all a good situation emotionally to be in to make a judgment. You know, if say there's a court case going on against us, then we don't want the judge to be in an angry mood at that time, isn't it? We don't want the judge to be exhausted at that time. Sometimes, say, a cricket match is going on, and the umpire is so exhausted, the umpire wants to go home quickly. The umpire just starts every appeal, out, out, out. So, the judgment, that's why it has to be done with patience. So actually, there was circumstance also involved over there. But because he was in an emotionally starved state, you could say. Exhausted, frustrated, infuriated. That's how, through a chain of events, first the boulder closing and then Sugriva standing sitting on the throne. Both of them coupled. So that's how his normal perception of Sugriva slowly got reversed. So right from seeing the boulder, his positive perception started changing. And eventually when he saw him on the throne, complete negative perception came.
Thank you for the excellent class. We have heard this incident so many times, but the depth which you give was very nice. I had one question, Prabhu. You talked about both Sugriva and Vali. They were pious, they were godly, but it's just because of the situation, so things became worse. Now in this situation, when we talk about relationship with devotees, how do we make sure that we don't misjudge or misunderstand them at the first place itself? Or due to conditioning, even we just expand that, how do we reduce the gap between misunderstanding to understanding?
So if among devotees, how do we ensure that we don't misunderstand others? Or if we misunderstand them, how can we come back to understanding soon? Actually, our bhakti is meant to make us more understanding. But unfortunately, understanding of others. But sometimes our bhakti makes us more judgmental about others. Because what happens, we have our own conception. This is right, this is the way to do things. If anybody is doing anything in a different way, it's wrong, deviant, this, that. We are very quick to pass ascribe labels to others based on our conception of how things should be. So actually if we internalize the philosophy adequately, not just at an intellectual level, but also at an emotional level. And that means, not just, this is the principle, this is the principle, but we also understand the lewd reality of the complexity of life. Then we will understand that there can be many factors involved. Okay, this person is acting in this particular way. How much do I know about this person? So, it can start from something very simple to something very big. So I remember once, I'm in Mumbai temple, and it was a festival. So after the festival, I came for lunch prasadam to the temple kitchen. And then I had come a little late, I was talking with some devotees after the program. So by the time I came down, I saw much of the prasadam was over. The sweet was over. So I felt a little annoyed. And I saw a senior devotee sitting on the opposite side, his senior brahmachari. There was already sweet in his plate, and the sweet had got over. So then, immediately, after I sat down, this devotee started asking, is there any sweet? Is there any sweet? He was asking one server, and he said, no problem, the sweet is over. He asked another server, is there any sweet? I started thinking, what is this? We already had one helping of a sweet. And the server has told you there is no more sweet available. Why are you asking everyone like this? Second person, third person, he's asking everyone, and because he was a very senior devotee. And everybody started running around, is there any sweet somewhere? And many times when prasadam is being served, so the devotees who are serving, they make their own plates before him. They keep them aside. So one devotee finally brought his own plate. And from his plate, he started serving sweet to him. I was thinking, how attached. You already had one empty and you want somebody else's plate sweet for yourself. And just as he was about to serve the sweet in his plate, he said, no, not for me, for him. And he pointed to me. He did not get sweet, please give him sweet. So he was asking for sweet, not for himself, but for me. Now normally when somebody asks for sweet, it's natural, but they want it for themselves. So in one sense, my attribution was perfectly logical. But it was totally wrong. So we just can't know why devotees are doing things. Vaishnavera Kriya Mudra Vigyehana Bujaya. Chaitanya Charitamrita says that we can't understand how devotees act. Now this does not mean that anything and everything within the devotee community is accepted. But it's important that we don't judge based on one-off instances. And so by knowing that we don't know much about others, we don't know much about what people are thinking, why they're acting in particular ways. It's best to give people benefit of doubt, especially devotees. If they're practicing bhakti, they are practicing the principles, they are devoting substantial part of their lives for Krishna's service, then if something which is going wrong, why should we make a big issue out of it? Now, having said that, there can be certain actions of some people which just disturb us too much. Now, if we feel disturbed, then it is best to seek clarification. If it's just a small thing we notice, sometimes we see something with question mark in that. But then afterwards, we move on, we forget. And no need to make an issue. But something troubles us again. Why did you do that? Why did she do that? If that kind of question keeps troubling us, then better to seek clarification. And when we seek a clarification also, it's important to be non-judgmental. Non-judgmental means simply describe the observation. As soon as we start stating our inference, then it becomes judgmental. So if you just tell the observation and then seek, I couldn't understand what is happening over there. And then probably they will give a clarification, some senior devotee will give a clarification. And even if sometimes the clarification may not satisfy us. So especially if that devotee has also been practicing bhakti for a good amount of time, they also been serving Krishna, then we have to understand that there are different ways in which Krishna can be served. And Krishna can inspire someone to serve in a way that is very different from the way Krishna is inspiring me to serve. So we should not limit the service to Krishna in terms that is only comprehensible to us. So, service to Krishna can assume many, many forms different from what I am comfortable with, what I am capable of also. So that way, even if we can see that, okay, this is one thing which I don't understand, but let me put it aside. And let me focus on my service to Krishna. That way we can minimize the disagreements that come, or the misunderstandings that come. I feel that if we clarify, most of the time we get some understanding. And the misunderstanding can decrease. What makes things worse is that instead of seeking clarification, when we start giving a judgment, then the other person becomes defensive. Or sometimes we talk with 10 people before talking with that person. And those 10 people have already told that person, this person is thinking like this about him. And then when we talk with them also, already there's a lot of negativity that is coming out there. And then it becomes explodes. So best is to seek clarification in a non-judgmental way, right in the beginning, from an authoritative source. And if you find find some senior Vaishnava whose way of explaining it makes sense to us. Just go to them, seek clarification, and move on with life. You know, we don't have to we don't have to make ourselves self-appointed watchdogs of everyone else. That's not our role. We are here to serve Krishna. Let's keep serving Krishna. And if something is wrong with someone, that is between them and Krishna. No, we don't have to take that position where we have to judge others. Most important, I would say, for avoiding misunderstandings is focusing on our own service. No, it's the idle mind that is the devil's workshop. So when we don't have enough service to do, then we start looking at other services and finding faults with it. If we have enough service to do, then okay, whatever others are doing, how does it matter to me? Let me focus on my service to Krishna. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
I have two questions.
The first one. Just one minute. Till what time? You decide. Okay, one other question. Fine.
Okay, I have two quick questions. The first one is, does knowledge have any correlation? Does knowledge have any correlation with being judgmental?
Knowledge.
Knowledge, yes. So why is it in my own personal experience, while I was looking at knowledge before, I could get a sense that I was judgmental when I had deep knowledge in certain situations, or when I had lack of knowledge. So this is my first question.
Let me complete first. Does knowledge have any relationship between judgmental? More than knowledge, it is the attitude that develops through the knowledge. That means that knowledge is ultimately a tool that we will use based on our attitude. So, if say somebody has medical knowledge, now medical knowledge can be used to heal, a doctor can use medical knowledge to heal a patient. But the same doctor can actually use the medical knowledge to complicate the disease of the patient so that they can get more money from the patient. So knowledge is simply a tool, and it is our attitude that determines how we use that knowledge. So some of us have by default a judgmental mentality. That's just the way we are. It's not necessarily bad, but that's the way. We all have different conditionings, and some of us have a more judgmental mentality. If we have that, then our knowledge often reinforces that judgmental mentality. But if we use the knowledge conscientiously to open our minds, to understand that actually, in one sense, in the Kena Upanishad, it is said that one who thinks he knows, he does not know. One who thinks that he does not know, he knows. That means that actually the more knowledge we get, the more we understand how complicated life is. How many subtleties and nuances and shades of grey there can be in every situation. So, the more knowledge we get, if that is the way our knowledge develops, not so much in terms of, just see how much I know. But the more knowledge we get, the more we understand how complicated the world is. Then that knowledge engenders humility. Just like say scientific knowledge of the space. At one level, people may say that we have conquered space. Now we have gone to this celestial body, that celestial body, we have conquered space. But at other level, if we consider, the more we have come to know about outer space, we just understand how tiny we are. As compared to the vastness of space, the earth is like a tiny marble. In a vast, almost infinite space. So the more we have come to know about outer space, the more we have come to know how little we know about outer space. Because there is so much more to know. So like that, knowledge can also bring humility. And when that happens, then the judgmental attitude goes down. So it will depend on our basic attitude, how we use our knowledge. But if we especially get knowledge from those who are non-judgmental, or we associate with those who are non-judgmental, then our basic attitude can be changed. And then that knowledge, instead of leading to judgmentality, see, judgment happens when we think we know. But if there is humility, see, humility in the physical domain means, you know, we bow down, we fold our hands in respect. Humility in the intellectual domain means we admit that I don't know. That I don't know. Or at least there is a possibility that I may not know the full story. That is humility in the intellectual domain. So if we get that humility in the intellectual domain, then our knowledge will make us less judgmental. Does that answer your question?
The last one, of course, I have now been to the beginning. How to remain quiet and also how to remain quiet or be a bit exhausting in a state of distrust?
Agnostic.
Yeah, when I say slightly get away from the situation and be calm to your own self, I mean, how can you maintain that state?
Okay.
Because I'm in a job where I need to interact with lots of people across the country. Sometimes, you know, you hardly know about people around that culture that I know. But how is it then quiet? Because I need to a confusion that I have.
Okay. So if an environment has a lot of people and there is some amount of distrust, at that time how can we remain quiet and agnostic? Actually, the focus need not be on being quiet or agnostic or becoming assertive or all-knowing. The point focus can be on our purpose. Now, what am I here to do? It's like if I'm driving on a road, you know, the most important thing for me to know is, okay, what is the traffic on the road here? Which road, which turn I am to take, which turn I am not to take. Now, if along the way there is scenery, I can look at the scenery. If along the way there is some dirt and foul smell, I just pass through it. The important thing is not whether it's beautiful scenery or whether there is dirt and nastiness. The important thing is whether I am on my journey. So, if we keep our purpose clear in any situation, okay, then what am I here for? What am I trying to do? Then that purpose creates focus. See, when the purpose is not strong in our mind, then our mind does not have focus. Think about this, think about that, think about that. If our purpose is clear, then we will that focus will itself help us understand, okay, you know, which situation I need to understand how much, where I need to clarify, where I need to understand, where I need to judge, how much I should spend my energy in what. All that falls into place once our purpose is clear and we are focused on the purpose. But if, say, we are going to some office or some appointment, then we don't bother too much about what is the scenery around us. But if we're just going on a casual stroll, then we'll see everything. So like that, you know, if you understand that this world itself, it is not our destination. It is not a destination, it's a station. We are on a multi-lifetime journey. We are evolving towards God. The situation that we are in, it's just one station in the journey of our life. We keep that in mind. We have to grow spiritually. We have to do whatever it takes in terms of our responsibilities in this world. But our focus is on doing those responsibilities and growing spiritually. Once that purpose is clear, then how much time and energy to invest, how to approach various situations, all that becomes much clearer. So if you keep the focus in mind, then whether to stay quiet in some situations, whether to express our concern in some situations, whether to take a stand in a particular situation, all that will fall into place once the priorities are clear. If you keep our focus in mind, then all these questions, we will ourselves get the overall sense of perspective by which to understand this. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada ki, Shri Ramachandra Bhagavan ki, Shri Ram Namo Mahamahotsav ki, I go.